Hey, you're listening to Sidelines on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google. And as always, you can get every single episode at 98.5thesportshub.com. This week, we shoot the breeze a little bit about what's been going on in our lives, but eventually we talk about the Super Bowl. Not so much the game itself, as the whole hot take culture surrounding it. Hint, we don't like it. We also talk about the Patriots' quarterback plans this offseason, and, as always, plenty of Bruins talk after a big win over the Capitals. So, without further ado, let's start the show. Did the guys come to your place?
No, of course not.
What was it again?
So my shower is like the tub faucet. It's just running water constantly. And it's not like it's a straight pour, but it's like a heavier drip and it's like getting heavier every day. And I'm like, this is just running water, guys. This is the bill is going to be crazy high for you, not me. I'm trying to get right. You to come out and fix it. Like, cause I don't want everyone's rent to go up because you didn't fix running water for 5 days. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, that's a good point. The regular running water or hot water or whatever, it's usually on them. So you think that would be the first thing they would come fix?
Yeah, right.
The like water problem.
Yeah, so they haven't. I'm gonna have to send another note though and be like, guys, this is getting worse. Like, someone needs to come out and fix this.
Yeah, there's a pink slime coming out of the tub now, and it's starting to move. It's very disturbing.
Even I'm gonna have that guy show up in my building.
Yeah, a child.
Yeah,
a child.
The joyfulness is over. Yeah,
I like the buzzing of flies to hear me.
You know that scene where he's like the flying nanny was so terrifying as a kid. It was so scary. It was one of the scariest scenes in that entire movie.
My friends and I unintentionally laughed at it when we watched it years later, though, because right after. They're running away, and she's with Janine, and Dana's with Janine. She's like, "Was that a ghost?" And she's like, "No, it was Janusz." And just thinking about the scenario, it's like, wait, the weird guy from the museum just flew up to your window.
Yeah, there's that.
And then flew away. Oh, okay.
And then he became part of CSI Cybercrime or whatever it was, that show that lasted, I think, like 5 episodes.
Yeah, that's what it's one of those. I've seen that. I saw that guy in a bunch of other things after Ghostbusters 2 because he's like a veteran actor. And like I was used to him having the foreign accent. So when I saw him speaking perfect English, I was like, who's this guy? It was weird. It's sort of like the first time I saw Tom Hanks was Forrest Gump. So it was a little weird to see him in other movies after that, being just regular Tom Hanks. It's like, wait, that's the same guy?
Right.
From Greenbow, Alabama is all of a sudden just a regular old American. I mean, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
I
acting in general is, it's kind of weird. It's kind of weird that people can just have accents and then they just don't, but that's okay.
I know. It reminds me of Knocked Up outtakes. I don't know if you ever saw that. You saw Knocked Up, I assume, the movie.
Of course, yeah.
There's outtakes on the DVD back when you bought DVDs with special features. And they had like a fake documentary about finding the star. And it like ended with Seth Rogen, but they ran through all these other actors just like fighting with Judd Apatow. And one of them was Orlando Bloom. And he just refused to drop the British accent.
Really?
Come up to him, he's like, dude, this is an American story. So please, can you please just lose the accent? I'm not going to lose the accent, man, or whatever he said. And yeah, that's my story about a DVD special feature.
I like that. I've never jumped into the DVD extra feature. I think they're all on YouTube now. Like they're just all on YouTube, so you can just watch them there.
I was wondering about that. Yeah, because like now, like everything's digital, but like where do you get the special features? I'm a big special features guy. I bought I had all the Lord of the Rings extended editions. They had like hours and hours of bonus features. It's like, I wonder, maybe it's just on YouTube now. You're right. I think you're right.
Yeah, I just assume everything is on YouTube now. If something's not on YouTube now, I'm like, well, that's weird. Did it really happen? So I'm at that level of my life now where I just assume that everything is on the internet. And if I can't find it, it never happened. That's how it is.
I don't love it. I know it makes us, I know it makes me old, but I'm not a big like digital collection guy. Like I still play video games, but I still like to buy the physical game. I like to have a case that I can put on my bookshelf. And they used to make instruction manuals and stuff like that with artwork and all that, but they don't even include that anymore. But, you know, I'm a fan of that thing. It feels more like a real collection than just if everything's digital. I don't know. That to me is just soulless.
No, I get what you're saying. I mean, there is something you said for the physical copy and actually owning that versus, you know, just having it ripped onto a computer. I've always hated the idea of having, you know, a sort of, you know, like the Dropbox full of movies or shows or whatever like that, because what happens if you lose that, you know, then right. Then that's over and done with, you know, and you don't have that anymore. So I do like enjoy the physical aspect of owning something, but at the same time, I'm trying to get rid of all this shit I own. I own too many things. So like I'm cool to like get rid of stuff, but then I'm like, oh yeah, I kind of wish I still had that.
Right. No, it's a cycle. It's a cycle. Cause I've bought so many books over my life. This is another thing is I prefer the physical. I still prefer like a physical book over like an ebook or a Kindle or whatever, because it's a great excuse to not look at your phone screen for an hour or so, is to just sit back and just read a regular book, you know, so your eyes aren't melting out of your face and, you know, maybe you'll learn something along the way or you read a nice story. I know that makes me old too, and it makes me old and boring, and kids don't seem to enjoy reading like they used to, but that's another thing. But yeah, I've been going through a cycle of buying books, reading them, and then just either donating them to a library, or used to be able to sell them to a bookstore. I don't think they have any value anymore in that case. But yeah, life is just a series of cycles, endless cycles of stuff. That's what it's been for, at least for people from our generation and earlier.
So that's right.
It's a little weird now. Like now everything's digital. Kids in the generation after us probably have no physical possessions really besides their phone. And so it's weird. They have no possessions.
That's right.
Seems
that's
odd.
Right. Well, welcome. It sucks.
Well, it's nobody's forcing us to do it that way. I'm still holding on to the physical stuff as much as I can.
Yeah, no, and I get that. I feel that 100%. But whatever. Again, I just try to own less stuff. So you got to find that happy medium between owning a million things and just having what you need, right?
Right. Yeah. No, it's good to get to. It's good to like cleanse every now and then. Like I was saying with the books, like every now and then you go through like all your drawers and stuff, and you're like, why was I holding on to this again? And then you just fill like three trash bags of stuff, or you donate them or whatever. It is a good feeling. So I wonder how do people get that feeling now? By like deleting files?
Oh yeah, clearing out the Mac. Oh yeah, you gotta
you do a fresh install of Windows or the Mac OS.
No, once a month I go through and I delete, you know, because with what we do, you know, we download so many photos from USA Today and Getty. Like once a month though, I go through and I delete all the ones that I just don't need anymore, because like they're in our database, so like I don't need them. Like why in my laptop? So. I do that once a month, and let me tell you, that feeling is great. Oh my God, I love that feeling.
Well, that's your personal laptop though, right?
Yeah, I never got a work laptop.
Yeah, I have a work laptop, so I don't even care about that. I have literally everything I've ever downloaded to this computer is still on this computer.
Mm. Yeah, no, I got the personal, I have a personal one, which also doubles as a work one. So, got to clear out those files.
I still have all my old Felger and Maz parodies. I keep getting messages about what happened to them. Did you delete them? I did delete them off Twitter. But I might put them back up on my Instagram, because I'm just done with Twitter. I talk about this all the time.
I know. I don't want to talk about it again.
I don't either. I'm just explaining where I'm at. I'm just at a spot where I just don't want to tweet anymore. So, and if it's my best content, I don't really want to put it on Twitter anymore. I'm not out on Instagram yet. So maybe I'll put it all back up on Instagram. I want to build my following there more anyway. So, you know, nothing against my Twitter followers that like me and that I like back. You know, there are some good things, good people on there. But I'm not putting those on Twitter anymore. All it does is get people in trouble. So I'm not even bothering.
Instagram is the last, like, good app, in my opinion. It's the last, like the last one.
Frontier.
Yeah, it's the last one where it hasn't been infiltrated by angry people, you know, who just want to scream all day. So, I mean, and maybe it's just the experience I've curated for myself on there, where I don't use my real name. I don't advertise, you know, where I work. I don't advertise what I do for work. It's just, you know, so maybe I don't deal with that because of that reason. But I think I've made a nice experience on Instagram where it's not people, you know, just yelling their opinions all day. Like it's more, you know, it's memes, it's pictures of what they're doing. It's, you know, it's nice. It's a nice change from, you know, Facebook's all politics. Twitter's all
right.
God knows what, you know, this is kind of like the last safe haven, and I'm sure it'll get ruined at some point. But right now that's the one I really enjoy, just because it's just like I feel like your freedom on Instagram is way more noticeable than your freedom on any other app that we use in 2021.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it could definitely get ruined, because ultimately the problem is the people, not the platform. But yeah, they de-emphasize comments, which I think helps. And just focusing on pictures and videos sort of lends itself to creative stuff, funny stuff, and happy stuff, positive things, which I know that even that could get to a point where it's just fake, but you don't have to follow those people. Follow the real genuine people, you know, and the funny people and all that stuff. I follow a lot of comedians. And so, you know, people are trying to actually enjoy themselves and be funny and entertain people on here. Okay. I'll give you a shot.
But, yeah, no.
Yeah, obviously that's just the, you know, Twitter obviously stinks for the opposite reason, because it's just a big comment section and all people do is bitch at each other and get each other in trouble. So I'm done with it. Yeah, the Felger parodies will be back to the people who are interested, but just not on Twitter. So that's how it's going to go for me.
I respect it. Do your thing.
Cool. How you doing over there? Hunkering down? How'd the blizzard treat you?
It was just rain. There's just rain. There was a few inches of snow, but other than that, it was all rain here. I mean, really?
I drove back to my apartment yesterday. I've been staying at my parents' house. It's just easier. Like, I don't have to worry about where I'm parking or anything like that. So
yeah, I went.
Whenever there's a nor'easter, I just go stay with them for a night or two. So I have to deal with all the BS up in Medford. But I drove back to my place in Medford yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and there was snow everywhere. Like, it didn't, I mean, didn't, I mean, yeah, there was, as much as Haverhill, but
there was snow, but I didn't have to. Like, I tried shoveling, and when I went out there to shovel, it was just rain. I shoveled water. I was like, oh, got the wrong tool here. And then I just stopped because there was nothing to shovel. It was just rain. So I don't know. I lucked out. It was gross though. I stepped in a big puddle. It was really gross.
Yeah, it was the gross, heavy, wet type of snow. Rather, the last snowstorm we got like a few weeks ago was nice and light, and it was gone in a couple days because it was like 50 the next day. But this was a little much. April got like 18 inches. Did a lot of shoveling. My shoulders and back are killing me.
Where my sister lives, my family lives, they got like, I think like 24, they said. It was like 24 inches or something like that. So, yeah, honestly, though, I am done with snow. I mean, listen, I love covering the Bruins and, you know, I love the fans and everything. But if I got an offer to go cover the Tampa Bay Lightning tomorrow, I would take it. I'm so done with snow.
Oh, of course.
I have no interest in you know, 29 now, lived almost 30 years in snow. That's enough for me. I'm good. Thanks. I don't blame anybody who decides that they're done with New England or the Northeast in general and moves to Arizona or Texas or Florida, like whatever. Like, I know there are different kind of weather emergencies down there versus snow. So it might be like pick your poison, but oh my God, there's nothing worse than having to put on 9 layers of clothing and go outside and just shovel for an undetermined amount of time. Who knows how long it's going to be? Might be 20 minutes, might be 30, might be an hour. There's nothing worse than that feeling.
It really, yeah. Anyone who like talks about all the snow like it's a good thing or wears it as a badge of honor or the worst possible thing is criticizing you for what you just said. Dude, you don't like Boston? Get out of here, dude. It's like people that talk like that probably have never left Massachusetts. I feel like you don't know what it's like anywhere else if you feel like this is the best place to be for weather. I mean, the only selling point we really have is like, well, we never have to deal with an earthquake or a wildfire. Hurricanes are very rare. You know, we don't have to worry about disasters. That's the thing. But you got to put up with the unbearable cold, which immediately preceded the snowstorm, which was just some of the worst cold we've had in a while. And then you get 2 feet of snow, and then you deal with that for a couple of weeks. Fun. Yeah. This is where I want to be in January.
Somebody had I had a tweet where I just said, why does anyone live here? You know, basically poking fun at how awful the weather is.
That's an annual tweet from you. You always, every time there's like the first big report about like, oh my God, we're getting 9 feet of snow. You're like, why are we doing this? Guys, yeah. Can we leave? What is going on here?
Oh, I think it's a,
what are we doing?
It was a bad idea to settle here. They landed here on Plymouth Rock. They should have went, let's see if there's anything better.
It's a bit nippy in the air. Maybe we should head south a little bit.
Exactly.
I don't know if they were so scientifically inclined back then where they knew it got warmer in the south.
Right.
First piece of land, you're like, no, this is good.
Yeah, this is fine. We'll take it. Yeah, it's fine. No, it's good. I said that, and somebody had a funny reply that said, well, it's better than California, which has a new season just called fire. And I was like, that's depressing, but also very funny. There is no fire season here.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. That is the thing about California. You got to worry about your house burning down literally once a year.
Yeah, which I'm okay with not having to deal with personally.
Yeah, it would be nice if we had some of the landscapes and the views and all that in California. And not to mention it's 80 and sunny every single day. But but then you got the droughts. Then you got to worry about the earthquakes and being underwater. And, of course, the wildfires. I mean, it's probably a good trade-off, but I mean, California is expensive though. It's gotta be, if I'm moving to somewhere like for the weather, like and all that, it would probably be more like Nashville. Cause I think Nashville isn't as expensive to live. I could be wrong about that, but there's other cities that are like on the rise and the cost of living isn't nearly what it is in Massachusetts or New York or California. That seems more attractive to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've told this on here before, but I had two interviews down in Nashville years ago for their Predators beat job. And I mean, I loved that city. You know, I everything worked out the way it was supposed to, I guess. But I really wanted that job because of the things you mentioned, right? Like that was a city that was on the rise. You know, the weather was nicer and the cost of living was more affordable. I mean, what I pay for here, you know, I get a nice townhouse looking thing right outside Nashville for the same price. So, you know, that was a great city when I went down there. So yeah, I could see why you'd want to be there. And yeah, for me, I don't know. Like I have family in Florida. I don't think I'd want to live in Florida full time. If they had an NHL team in South Carolina, that's where I'd be. Like that's like Charleston, South Carolina is such a beautiful city that if they had a pro team or whatever, I'd be there in a heartbeat. Like that, if you've never been, like, go. That place is awesome. I love that city. Probably one of my favorite cities in America.
Never been. I've never been to Nashville either. I've been outside of Nashville. And so, yeah, the weather was nice, I guess. I couldn't tell you what Nashville is like, though.
But it was cool because they had, like, Bridgestone Arena, where the Preds play, is right on Broadway. So it's right by all like the music bars, and I think the Country Music Hall of Fame is like across the street from the arena. And then you go over a little bridge, a little footbridge, and there's Nissan Field or whatever it's called, where the Titans play. So I thought it was cool. Like I liked how centralized everything was. And that's kind of what I liked about, if you go to Philly has all three arenas in the same like complex, which I thought is cool. 'Cause it's like, oh, this is just simple. This is like the sports area of, you know, wherever. So I really enjoyed when I was down there. There's actually a funny Twitter discussion today. It said, what's the worst city you've ever been to? What's the worst place you've ever spent time in?
This will definitely result in a healthy discussion, healthy debate.
Mine is definitely Newark, New Jersey. That place was gross.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would say that.
Yeah, I just haven't been a lot of places. But like that for me is number one. That place was awful. Oh my God.
Newark has been in bad shape since the late 60s.
Didn't leave the hotel. I went out the first night and it was just awful. I couldn't find anything to do. Couldn't find anywhere to go. Jumped on the train, the PATH train to New York City. And then that was it. The rest of the time I was in the hotel or at the arena.
That's probably, I think that's what Newark has functioned as for decades now. It's like, it's just one stop away from New York City. Just the next stop on the way. Passing on through.
Yeah, that's all it can be. Clearly.
I mean, you're saying there's nothing there.
No, there was nothing there. Trying to think like what else. Like I just haven't been a lot of places that I didn't want to be. Like I even thought Buffalo wasn't as bad as I thought it was gonna be when I was in Buffalo. Like it wasn't you hear, oh, it's Buffalo, oh, it's this. I didn't hate it. It wasn't that horrible. I mean, it wasn't great, but it wasn't horrible either.
If you went every year, you might have a different opinion, I suppose.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, yeah, we haven't done that. We don't travel too much. So, like, I bet if you went to Philly over and over and over again, you get sick of it.
Yeah, that's true. How about Buffalo ruining the NHL? That's great. Ruining the weekend.
Yeah, Buffalo and New Jersey are getting owned, huh? Well, Buffalo, it's just Taylor Hall and Rasmus Ristolainen. Mm-hmm. Who have COVID or they're on the COVID list anyway?
Yeah, they're on the list. Was it started by the Devils? Is that what they're saying? Like that the Devils gave it to everybody?
I mean, I assume they have like 19 players.
Yeah. Yeah, that's quite a lot.
Buffalo and they were the Sabres were about to come here. So thankfully they turned that on. They shut that down before that could happen.
Yeah, and Buffalo is still mediocre as hell. Who saw that one coming? This team that wins the offseason constantly is not winning the regular season. That's weird. How unlike them.
I know. How's Taylor Hall been playing before he got COVID?
I actually don't know. That's a good question. He hasn't been as good as Tyler Toffoli, who is literally destroying everybody. Or he's destroying Vancouver, I should say.
I think Montreal won the offseason. I would have said that before the season, too. I like their moves.
Josh Anderson.
Didn't they made a move on defense, I thought. I can't remember who it is.
I feel like they always have a defenseman coming into the picture.
Jonathan Drouin seems like he keeps getting better. Nick Suzuki looks like he's emerging this year. So I was on with Arcan on Sunday, and he asked me, did the Bruins get lucky to end up in the division that they're in? I said no, because like you can't really. I mean, it's hard to analyze it that way. Look at this one team and say, oh, they got lucky. Because you could argue other teams got lucky. You could argue Montreal's lucky that they're in the All-Canada division and the rest of the teams aren't that good. You know? But, like, I don't know. The Bruins not being in the same division as Montreal this year seems like kind of a blessing. Because the Bruins do look like a top-four team in their division. But especially with Buffalo not being good and having COVID. I think having Montreal would have made it a lot more complicated. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I would almost say that the Canadiens are lucky that they're in the division they're in. Because I don't necessarily think that many of the Canadian teams are any good. It's Montreal and the Leafs in that division, if you ask me, in terms of who's an actually good team. And we know how the Bruins have handled Toronto. They still have problems on defense. The Canadiens are a lot better, though. To your point, they're much improved. That would be your biggest competition. But then you look beyond that, it's Winnipeg. They're okay. Edmonton is a team with an average offense once you get behind McDavid and Draisaitl and below average goaltending. Calgary, we're on, you know, what feels like year 10 of Calgary being a team with an identity crisis. Like, what are they? Are they fast and skilled? Are they big and heavy? Do they have a goalie? You know, like, this is constantly what we're talking about with Calgary. Vancouver's okay, but again, you know, Pedersen and Hughes, like, are they ready to be a legit, you know, top four threat, basically? Then you have Ottawa, which is a joke. So, you know, like, so I almost look at it like Montreal is cleaning house because this is sort of like this Claude team right now is sort of like a 2011, 2012 Claude team with the Bruins where like he has the pieces that make the most sense for his roster, his system, his construct, whatever you want to call it. They have that healthy blend of speed and skill and size. And they got the goaltender and the defenseman. You know, like that's such a huge part of, you know, Montreal feels complete for the first time in years, right? That they feel like they have a complete roster and a complete complement of players. So I don't know. I almost feel like we'd be talking about Boston being, you know, what Montreal is if they were located in Ontario. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I almost feel like they'd be the same kind of team.
Yeah. I mean, the Bruins seem like they have a little bit of everything now. I'm starting to like their mix a lot more than what we've had the last couple of years.
Yeah, and I mean, hey listen, you have back-to-back games where you overcome a three-goal deficit against the Capitals and you take 3 out of 4 points. I mean, who saw that coming, right? Like, this rivalry has been so one-sided for so long that just losing by one and losing in overtime felt like a win because, yeah. It's like, oh, okay, well, it's better than, you know, getting shit-kicked for 60 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the status of that rivalry. So to
now
win,
it's a real rivalry.
Exactly. And I loved Monday's game. I really did. Like top to bottom, loved it. You know, with what Frederick was able to do, the fact that you score 4 goals, you make that comeback. None of them are on the power play. It's all even strength. Like that's huge too. They need to win those kind of games. You can't rely on the first line and the power play every night. So what they did is they got a little bit of both. They got Pastrnak with the first two, and then Craig Smith and Brandon Carlo, like some of your depth players, your depth scorers, if you want to call them that, come through for you. And that's what has been missing with this team for so long. So if they can keep that going, I mean, now we're talking about, you know, this team being what they were in 2019 and last season before the shutdown, maybe even a little bit better based on how certain guys fit into the roster.
Frederick, I think, is making a big difference. And I know, obviously, I spoke highly of him last week. So we all, you know how big of a fan I am of his. It's not just the fight. It's that presence. Yeah, I mean, like we talked about a little last week where Patrick Maroon was throwing people around and giving people noogies, dunking their heads in the toilet throughout that series last year. Well, now I feel like Trent Frederick could get in Maroon's face and you know, make him look silly if he's confident enough, if he's aggressive enough. And it's like it's that presence, and he plays that heavy type of game where he's going to look even better in the postseason than in the regular season because that it plays well to that type of game. And, I mean, who knows how much he's going to finish offensively. He still only has 1 point. But I think that will get better over the course of his career. And right now what he's given them is what they've needed for the last few years, and I mean – the Tom Wilson thing was obviously the culmination of that. And I love that Peter Laviolette was annoyed that Wilson decided to fight Frederick in the first place because it's like, you're a Bruins fan, you take that trade-off. Wilson's not like a complete goon. He can actually score. And he scored in one of the games. I forget if it was Monday or the game before. So it's like he's dangerous in more than one way. And to get him to get under his skin that much, to get him to fight you, and spark your team in the process, I thought, was huge. And, I mean, they're going to need – they haven't had a guy like that for a few years, and they're going to need it. The longer they go in the season, the more they're going to need it.
Yeah, no, exactly. And he's one of many now, right, that can agitate and annoy and also play an effective game. We've talked about Nick Ritchie as well. You know, Ritchie's one of those guys as well. And tonight we're going to see, we're recording this on Wednesday. Tonight we're going to see Anton Bleed. He's going to make his season debut. He's another one. He's a fourth line energy agitator kind of player who can get under your skin. So, you know, they're finding ways here. And this is, Cassie talked about this after Monday's win. He said, we're trying to find the mix between being an abrasive team, you know, that creates problems and headaches for the opponent while also still being a skilled team. So it's almost like they're realizing that, yeah, if you're going to be a winner, you need to have both. You know, it's what we've talked about and what you've talked about for a long time is that, you know, you can't be four lines of speed. You know, here's a bunch of skill, because ultimately you're going to hit that brick wall. You know, and I think now the Bruins realizing, okay, we can still be this, but let's build our own brick wall here. So that's been a huge boost to this team right now. With Frederick, yeah, I mean, this is why I've changed my tune on this team a little bit, because I didn't think that we would see some of the things that you're talking about, right? Like the offensive game, the ability to make plays, it's there way more than it was last year. You know, his first two showings here in the NHL, I thought he was timid with the puck. He didn't know what to do when he had it on a stick. It just felt like it was, okay, this is where offense went to die, was Trent Frederick's stick. Now it's like, he's not going to, you know, go end-to-end top shelf on you, but he knows where to put the puck for his line mates. He knows where to be to make plays happen. And when you have that going, you really become a different kind of player in the sense that, all right, you can move him third line, fourth line, wherever, and you know the game is not going to slip. Like, he's going to give you what he's given you every night because he's a smarter player. He knows what to do now.
Exactly. Yeah, that's sort of my point, is that, like, no, he's never going to be an offensive dynamo, but if he can grind his way up to like a 40, 50 point type of guy just by being smart and knowing how to set up his line mates and just playing hard and forechecking, like, he does all those things so well. That's what I love about him, is that he's not just the goon that you're going to throw on the ice to scrap with someone. Like, he's chirping, he's getting in there in the corners, and yeah, and he's creating space for his line mates. So I feel like he could be a perfect third line winger for them, for the foreseeable future. For now, in the foreseeable future, but maybe he could be even a little better than that over the long term. But right now, they found the exact kind of sort of power forward that they need for so long. I know I keep saying they needed this, but they have. And I feel like people have been whistling past the graveyard on players like this. It's like, no, it's a speed and skill league. We need all 5'9" wingers who skate straight down the ice and then shoot it off the crossbar. It's like, I'm done with that stuff. Like, we're getting more than enough offense out of the top line, and we need more out of the second line. But once you get to that bottom six, you need more guys like Trent Frederick. And I'm just glad that he's made a sort of a leap in terms of his confidence. Like, you can just tell the confidence. I mean, the guy's getting right in the grill of Tom Wilson and PK Subban. Like, the, you know, kid's got some cojones.
No, I mean, yeah, and that's what they want, right? They want that snarl. They want that snarl without taking away from the effectiveness of a line, of a team, you know, whatever, because they don't want – Cassie has said it again and again, and this is why, you know, it's difficult for the Bruins to say – when people say, oh, get Ryan Reeves. Okay, well, if Ryan Reeves can't play, he's not going to play. Like, he's not going to be in the lineup. Like, as great as that would be, you need to be able to play the game. And right now with Frederick and with Richie – you're seeing two guys who can be nasty, but also play hockey. You know,
okay, just to clarify, you mean by can he play, meaning like, is he any good? Not like physically. You mean like, is he good at hockey? Is what you mean?
Can he play a shift? Yeah.
can I put you on the ice and you're not going to take a dump all over the surface?
Can he play beyond the first period or second period of the game, and when the game is not within four goals, basically? Can you put him out there in a 2-1 game and be like, all right, this is fine, we'll be okay here, or he'll give us something here?
Can you be more than the weirdo janitor that's just laying down sawdust because you just puked all over yourself?
I mean, think about it, right? Like, think about, like, go back to 2014, 15, whenever it was. I can't remember exactly, but the Bruins had Tyler Randall, right? Like, and he was a fourth line enforcer who actually scored some goals. But look at his ice time. They didn't trust him. Like, they didn't trust him at all because he wasn't a great skater. He wasn't great offensively. You know, he scored goals. I think his shooting percentage was like 20. You know what I mean? Like, he didn't take a lot of shots, but he scored on a bunch of them. And then that was it. That was it for him. He was never back in the NHL because he couldn't, you know, play more than that 8-minute sort of threshold, or he didn't have the trust to play more than that eight to 10 minute threshold. And that was sort of the end of it, right? Like, you need to be able to play both. And the Bruins right now, they're identifying guys that can do both. And it's making a world of difference. It really is.
Yeah, Craig Smith, too, is another one. I think Craig Smith, Trent Frederick, there's probably guys I'm not thinking of off the top of my head, but, like, they're not like speed demons, but they'll give you a little bit of a – they can skate a little bit, and they got the size, and they're going to be aggressive. And Smith especially is fine. Like, finally they have a guy who's just going to shoot the puck when he's actually in position to shoot the puck, not trying to make that extra fancy pass through a whole forest of skates. Like, we're still seeing some of that, but, I mean, like, at least some of these new guys and younger guys are playing it a little bit differently in that regard. And I think finally it's maybe there's been a message from up top of, like, we need to start playing this way, and maybe it's finally starting to get through. I don't know. Maybe it's just that they have a better mix of players to execute that, but I don't know. Do you think the message is finally starting to get through of what they need to be if they want to actually, like, make a real run at the cup?
I think so, and I think, to your point with Smith, he's taking shots from every angle humanly imaginable.
Never seems like a bad angle, though. It seems like if he's in a reasonable position, you know, around the slot or the faceoff dot, he's firing, which I love about him.
No, I agree with that. I agree with that 100%. And so you'll take that, and you hope that keeps on coming. For me, the big thing is I want to see who we can stick with, right? And right now it's hard because the Bruins are down Kostya and DeBrusque and, you know, Stanika as well. So they're down three of their right wings, right? Or three guys who've played right wing this year. We know DeBrusque is a lefty, but he's played right all season. So, you know, that puts him into that spot now where he's bouncing between Krejci and Coyle. I've liked him with both. I think I like him more with Coyle, though, than with Krejci, just personally. We'll see how that shakes out. But, yeah, Smith has been consistent, right? We talked about this for our season preview, basically. We said, can he avoid the stretches where he disappears for five games, right?
Yeah.
And he got off to a great start. He had, I think, 4 points or 5 points in three games. He quieted down a little bit. But to what you're saying, the shot is still there. The creating looks is still there. And that is what I think what you're saying, where they realize maybe more effective five-on-five team. The ripple effect of a guy who's constantly creating something at 5-on-5 can't be lost.
All right, we're going to take a quick 15-second break here, then we'll be back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Yeah, I think the last few games, we've seen guys that are only going to be reserves. Like you said, we're going to see Anton Bleed tonight. And, you know, Par Lindholm has come back into the lineup lately. There's another guy that his name's lost on me in the forward group, who's really only supposed to come up when he's in an injury situation. So, I don't know. I guess it's an interesting question of what they do when DeBrusque and Kostya are healthy. But, I don't know. I think Frederick has shown up. Frederick can't come out of the lineup. He's got to be there every game. And, I mean, ideally you don't have Smith or Richie on the second line. Ideally they're in the bottom six. But I don't know. I think the depth of among the depth forwards is good. It's like the question is still, like, are they going to have enough finish in the top six? And I don't know. I think we can't lose sight of the fact that they went down 3-0 in both of these games, because you're not going to come back from a 3-goal deficit every game. And that's definitely not sustainable if you face these guys in a 7-game playoff series. So I don't know. It's probably a complicated question with not more than one answer as far as how they fix that. But I don't know. I think the Capitals still have a lot of size on the forwards and the defense. It still gives them a little bit of trouble. The Bruins, what I saw from the first game anyway, Ty, is that, yeah, they dominated possession and they had way more shot attempts, but the high danger scoring chances were almost tied. They were almost tied in high danger scoring chances, even though the Bruins had an overwhelming shot attempt and shot on goal advantage. So what does that tell you? It tells you that they're still having trouble getting to the front of the net and getting inside on these bigger teams. And so, I mean, not to sound like a negative Nancy after they won the game the other night and they had a nice comeback. I'm not questioning their resilience. They're obviously a resilient team. And they have enough offensive skill, at least at the top of their line, to come back in these games. But, you know, how do they prevent going down 3-0 and improving the quality of the chances they get against a team like the Caps? It's probably not an easy answer, but I mean, do you think there's a way for them to fix that thing?
I mean, that feels 90% mental to me, right? You look at some of the goals they gave up to put themselves in those holes. I mean, the John Carlson power play goal can't happen, right? Like, this is one of the league's best offensive defensemen, and he just waltzes in untouched between the circles. You know, like, that's insane. That can't happen. You know, the some of the goals given up by both Rask and Halak need to be stopped, right? The Chara goal, you got to stop that. I'm sorry. That was not a good goal.
Yeah. I guess I asked you two different questions because my concerns are with offensively about the Bruins, but yeah, defensively, I don't think they were that bad. I think it's what you're saying is that, like, the goalies need to be a little sharper. You need to give them a save more often than they did in those types of situations from those types of shots. But I don't know. I guess it's sort of the same problem where the other team is bigger, and so there it's easier for them to get inside on you. But I don't know. I guess that wasn't really the issue. They're just lobbing the puck in from the point, and it's getting through the goalies. So, I mean, I don't know. Is there any other way to fix that if the goalies aren't going to sharpen up and start making those saves?
I just think that this offense is going to find its footing, right? Like, as a unit. And so maybe you're not digging out of those holes, like, to what you're talking about, right? Like typically when this team is rolling, right, they would give the start to the fourth line. The fourth line would set the tone. Then you come at them in waves with Bergeron and with Krejci's line. And next thing you know, it's 2-0, right? And you're up. And you're up. And the other team is demoralizing, going, what the hell? How are we going to stop this team? They're flying right now. So,
yeah.
I think that when Pastrnak is more like Pastrnak, and I think you're seeing that, right? The difference between game one and game two was staggering how noticeable it was. And you get some of these guys back, you're going to have more of an idea as to how do you utilize these forwards to give yourself that 2-0 lead, that early 3-0 lead, the 3-1 lead, whatever it is, so that you're not chasing the game in the second half of the game. So I think that'll come naturally with time, right? Like, if they can get healthy, which has been their biggest problem all year, honestly. If they can get healthy, right, like a lot of these issues, I think, will solve themselves, and they'll be back to knowing what they can and can't get away with. Because I think Cassie's still trying to figure out what it is that, you know, line X, Y, and Z is really good at, and how can you utilize them to maximize their input, you know, on that game.
Yeah, my concerns are still with the offense. We've been talking about that, I mean, since before the season started. I'm feeling better and better about the defense with each passing game. And so I think as long as the goaltending sharpens up, then you'll just see better results. But, you mentioned Chara. Do you think that not having him taking up that spot in the lineup and taking up all his minutes has allowed them to sort of open things up with the defense? Because I didn't know Jeremy Lauzon was capable of that. You know what play I'm talking about, the pass to, I think it was Craig Smith. I was like, wait a minute, what? Is that Paul Coffey out there? What's going on? I honestly thought it was McAvoy with the way he skated down toward the goal line and then made that slick backhand pass through people to a wide open Craig Smith. It's like, I didn't know he was even capable of that. So it's like, do you think their confidence is growing in that department where it doesn't even Brandon Carlo, he had the game-winning goal. He absolutely let it rip from the top of the face-off circle. So, like, he's pinching in and starting to make plays offensively. Like, do you think that they're sort of starting to find their footing as a unit and get rolling? And we're gonna keep doing this no matter who's out there on the blue line. Like, we're gonna get involved offensively, and it's gonna be very tough for you to defend because you're gonna have to defend against all five guys. Do you think that's sort of what they want to do on defense, and that's sort of where they're headed? And do you think not having Chara
has sort of accelerated that.
Well, I think they've definitely wanted to do that for a while. Like, they've wanted that to be, you know, sort of how their offense looks, how their team looks. They haven't been able to, you know, with Chara. You know, he's great, but he's 6'9". He's a statue, you know. So I think they miss him in certain respects, right? Like, look at a lot of the goals they've given up this year. Can't tell me that they wouldn't help to have a 6'9", 270-pound monster moving someone out of the way, you know, for these deflections and these screens and whatnot.
Yeah, we talked about it before. One of the problems with Lozon, he's letting guys get inside leverage on him a little too much. So that's one area where he needs to get a little better and where they sort of miss Chara. But
it's almost canceled out, though, by what you're mentioning, the offensive. Like, because if you can be even, right, if you're giving up plays at one end but you're creating at the other, it's like, okay, that's a trade-off you'll take. You know, you don't want to be giving up plays in the defensive zone and then adding nothing at the other end of the rink. So that's where that's helping, you know, add to his value over Chara, let's say. But I think with Carlo, I think what's happening here is that by playing without Torrey Krug, he's being asked to create more offense, right? Versus where in the past it was just defend and worry about defending and take care of the rest of that. So if this were an 82-game season, you know, his point pace is pretty – it would be closer, to, I think, to 30, 35 than, you know, than 56 games. He's on pace to match his career high, even in a 56-game season right now. If he can continue to produce at this level, he will match his career high. So that's huge, right? And he's never going to be a 40-point guy. But if he can give you 30, you know, in an 82-game season, 35 – That's and still play strong defense.
Be a plus defender. Yep.
That would be, you know, that would be a complete maximizing what he can do and what he means to your team. And the Bruins have asked him for years to be more of an offensive threat. And I think they're finally seeing it, right? His shot is pretty good. If you give him, you know, if he sees the ice in front of him and he can get that space to load it up and let it rip, he's got a pretty good shot. Like, that goal against Carter Hart was awesome. And then the goal he had the other night against Vanacek, I think is how you say it. I'm not 100% sure on that. Yep. I always want to say Vanacek. I don't know why.
You should never want
to. I know, right? That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think I called him Vitaly Potapenko on Twitter.
I don't mind that one. Potapenko just sounds ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
It's Potapenko. Shut up. Sorry.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. No, but those are good shots. Those are good goals. And so I want to see more of that. And I know the Bruins do. They've asked it out of him for years. They want to teach him how to walk the blue, how to create looks, create opportunities for himself and his line mates. And I think you're seeing that comfort now because of the fact that he has to take more of a take charge, you know, personality on that back end with some of the losses they've had.
No, he's got a little bit of skill. He could skate. He can make a decent first pass. You know, and then maybe he could use that skating and footwork to create opportunities for himself, sort of like he did the other night. So, yeah, I'll take that every now and then. Yeah, well, the problem is I just don't want these guys all of a sudden thinking that, you know, they're Erik Karlsson and they're going to be flying all over the place trying to just score the whole time. It's like at some point you need Lozon and Carlo to realize what their bread and butter is, which is defense. And you let guys like McAvoy and Grizzlick, whenever he gets back, you know, carry the load offensively. But, no, I love what they're doing defensively. Everyone's doing a little bit of everything. And so I think that makes it harder on the other team where you don't know where the puck's going. We don't know where the shot's going to be coming from. Do you feel like that's sort of the idea they want to plant in their opponent's heads? It's to make them that hard to play against, sort of defend the whole rink?
Oh, absolutely. Especially when what's been their undoing these last, you know, 4 years or whatever has been that they're a one-line team who relies on power plays. So if you can say, okay, we got four lines and we have a defenseman who can take chances, you know, that gets teams on their heels, right? Their heads are spinning. And one last thing about Lozon and Carlo for me is just they were part of this wave, right? This wave that happened a little bit before 2015 where these players that were coming up from juniors, they were bigger, right? They were 6'2", 6'3", you know, Carlo 6'5". Bigger defensemen who are asked to contribute offensively and can contribute offensively and can skate in addition to being really tough to play against defensively. They're part of that new wave of guys that we used to look at a defenseman like, let's just say Hal Gill, for example, right? We'd look at a defenseman like that and say, okay, he's just going to play defense. He can't do anything offensively. But I think these guys now coming up, they're such good athletes, right? And this isn't to say that Helgill wasn't a good athlete, you know, but like they the coaches look at them and say, okay, yeah, he is 6'5". He is more defense based, but I think we can coach him up to have some offensive game here. He's a good enough skater. Yeah. He can get away with it because skating is the most important thing now in today's game. So yep. A lot of these guys that are bigger, they have the ability to contribute offensively. It's just bringing that out of them. That seems to be the hard part at this level.
I think that's been arguably the biggest thing with Carlo is cracking that shell, you know, because he's never going to be Chris Pronger physically, even though he's 6'5". And I guess he's not like a vocal leader or anything like that. So I don't know. You think maybe it's been a confidence thing and maybe that's starting to turn a corner?
Well, I think he's getting more confident because I think he's becoming more of a leader.
Well, maybe like, not confidence, but like assertiveness, you know?
Yeah, yeah. He no longer. I mean, let's be honest here. The blue line is Charlie's and it's Brandon's. Like it is. So yeah. I think he is becoming more of a leader, and more confident in himself because he sort of has to be, right? Like what the Bruins in the offseason told him and told McAvoy, hey, this is your team now. Like this is your defense now. Like you guys are the 1-2 of this defense. So play like it. And I think when you get that, you know, that can go one of two ways. You can either embrace it or you melt. And right now, I think both players, Brandon especially, they're embracing that challenge.
We're going to take another quick break here. Just 15 seconds. We'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Do you have any other thoughts on the Bruins?
I don't. Do you have thoughts on Danny Amendola?
That's where I was just going to get to. You hate Danny Amendola.
I hate
shit, this article. You guys, if you're listening, go check it out at 985thesportshub.com. Ty Anderson with that fire headline. Danny Amendola is complaining about the Patriots again. And I have never seen a more kiss the rings kind of article from one of us than old Ty Anderson. Starts off with Danny Amendola desperately wants our attention again. A day after essentially discrediting the coaches, the Patriots coaches, for the success that led to 6 Super Bowl banners, Amendola continued his anti-Patriot media tour Tuesday during an interview with Colin. I didn't know we had Jerry Thornton ghostwrite for you. I didn't know we were doing that.
Yeah.
Explain yourself.
This guy is so friggin' bitter. It's unbelievable. Like it doesn't make any sense to me though. Like it just doesn't add up, right? So all right, the thing that bothers me is he says I took pay cuts to put rings on Belichick's fingers. No. Correction. One, you put one ring on anyone's finger because the time that you were playoff Amendola, they lost the Super Bowl. So you took one. You took a pay cut, and both times you took a pay cut, you never said, oh, well, they told me I had to. But every time he took a pay cut, he said, I love playing here. I love playing for these coaches. I love playing for this city. So to come out years later and be like, they did me wrong. No, you didn't have to agree to that. You could have hired an agent. That's what you want. The thing you seek at Danny Amendola is called an agent. A lot of players have them. Some players, like yourself, choose to negotiate by themselves. Here's the thing. You need to be smart enough to do that. So you don't get taken to the woodshed and take all these pay cuts and then complain about it years later.
All right.
The thing he seeks is called an agent, and he could have avoided all of this. I just hate this. 4 years later, you're still bitter. He's been bitter since the moment he left here, and that's fine. That's his right. But it's so frustrating to see this guy claim, like, to basically say that, like, he was done dirty, basically, because he wasn't. He didn't have to take those pay cuts. He probably would have been traded or cut had he not agreed to a pay cut. But he didn't like it here, clearly. So would that really have bothered him? You know, if you're willing to play a season in Detroit, I think you're willing to get cut by the Patriots and go somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, I'm usually pro player in these situations. I'm not going to be like pro Belichick when it comes like, yeah, show him out. Show him how it's done at the salary negotiation. But I mean, you're right about the thing about an agent. I didn't even know that he never had an agent throughout all that. Just give Don Yee a call if you love Tom Brady so much. Jeez. But, yeah, I mean, it's hard to have sympathy for him. But it's like, just refuse to take the pay cut and make him trade you. So, I mean, that sort of tells me that, like, he knew how good he had it here. He knew how good it had, and it wasn't just Brady. You know, my criticism for him would be, it's like, really, you're going to take credit, you're going to take all the credit away from everybody else that you played with, and you're just going to give it to Brady? Like, I get Brady leaves and he goes to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and now the Bucs are in the Super Bowl and the Patriots weren't good. Like, I get it. But does that undo everything that they ever accomplished outside of Brady? Whenever they won the Super Bowl with Brady, it wasn't just because of Brady. They had a complete roster. The closest thing they came to winning just because of Brady was the Falcons Super Bowl. And that was a hole that Brady himself helped dig and get back into it. And Danny Amendola was a big part of that Super Bowl comeback. He was a big part of 2014. And you said that, like, his biggest playoff performance was in that game against Jacksonville, and then they eventually lost the Super Bowl. But, no, I'll give him credit for being an important piece in 2014 and 2016. You know, he caught the big passes in both of those Super Bowls. He caught a touchdown at the end of the Seahawks one. He caught the last two-point conversion to tie the game at the very end of the Falcons one. So it's like, I give him credit for all that, but it's like, why are you taking credit away from all your other teammates? Like, you're saying you didn't have a good defense? You're saying you didn't have Rob Gronkowski or Julian Edelman? It's like, I don't get that. If I were another player on the Patriots, I'd look at Amendola's comments and be like, what the hell? I get it. Tom Brady is, like, the biggest thing, and he's the main reason that they contended for the Super Bowl every single year. No, I'm not denying that. I'm not one of these Belichick guys where it's like, oh, he made Brady, and it's all about the system and the Patriot way and all that. Like, I'm not saying that, but it's like, you have a complete team when you actually win the Super Bowl. I just think it's completely unfair to sort of take that all away from everyone else you played with. But when it comes to negotiating with Belichick, I'm on his side. It's like, yeah, he's a pain in the ass. And finally you realized, oh, if I want to get the most money and I have to get out of here. I have to go somewhere else because he's going to be a hard ass with my contract and make me take a pay cut. But it's like, yeah, like you said, he didn't have to take the pay cut. He could have left the first time he asked you. He could have held out or demanded a trade or whatever. And he would have obliged. Bill would have traded him to, you know, Cleveland when they still sucked if he demanded a trade or a better contract or whatever. So, like, yeah, I don't know. I don't get it.
The part that bothers me is, okay, I took pay cuts to put rings on Bill's finger. Okay, well, you got a ring too out of that. He didn't steal your ring. They didn't melt your ring in front of you. Yeah. Secondly, so did everybody else. So did everybody else. They took a pay cut so that the team could be better and win a championship. And guess what, Danny?
Tom Brady.
When you took that pay cut, you know why you took it? Go back to your comments in 2016. Go back to what you said in 2017. You said this team wants to win a championship. That's the only goal that we have. Okay, so then you were on board with putting rings on fingers. That's why you took that pay cut. You wanted to put rings on fingers. So you can't come out years later and say that rubbed me the wrong way. When you agreed 5 years ago, that is why you took a pay cut. Because championship is the most important thing. So you win it, and now it's rubbing you the wrong way? Okay. It doesn't make any damn sense to me. And if you want to be honest here, in my opinion, he was one of the most overpaid Patriots of the entire dynasty to begin with. $28 million, I think it was, right? It was 5 years and I think almost $30 million. I think it was $28 million.
Made a nice living.
Yeah. So, to be honest, his restructuring, I don't really pity that. Guys like Brady should have been making more. You know, some of the other guys that got restructured contracts as well should have been making more. Danny Amendola, not really on my list of guys that I think should be making more. I think he was paid appropriately given what he contributed during the regular season and the postseason. You put it together, he made his money just fine, in my opinion.
Right. It's like, I'm struggling to come up with an analogy, but it's like, you signed the papers. Now you're complaining about it years later? That doesn't compute. But, yeah, it was funny because Willie McGinnis was on with Zolak and Bertrand earlier today. Today it's Wednesday as we're recording this. And, like, it's funny how he and Amendola have two completely different views of the whole Patriots dynasty and the Patriot way and all that stuff. And, like, I know, like, there's a whole debate about whether the Patriot way is a myth and not. It's like, it's not an actual, like, there's no, like, scroll that Bill Belichick walks out with and rolls it down. It's like, hear ye, hear ye. Here lies the Patriot way. Rule one, don't be an a-hole. Like, it's not like an actual thing. But it's like, it's just their culture. It's their culture is, you know, sacrifice individuality for the team, which is what McGinnis said. And like, that did start before Tom Brady got here. And I'm not saying that, you know, Brady doesn't deserve any credit for that, because having the greatest quarterback of all time and having him buy into that philosophy of sacrificing a little bit of yourself for the betterment of the team was a massive, massive factor in how good they were for consistently for sustained success and all that. So it is interesting that like it's just the latest indication of Brady's longevity and how friggin' good he's been for so long that like he has two different eras of teammates that have completely different perceptions of the whole Patriot way thing. Because when Amendola got here, it was more about Tom Brady. And so, like, he looks at it as like, oh, wow, it's all about Brady. You know, it's all about Brady. But it's just, I don't know. That's a radio hot take thing to say that Brady was the Patriot way. And, like, just taking completely away from all your other teammates and all your coaches and giving them no credit. Like, Brady was the only reason they did anything. Like, come on. When Brady was the only thing here, they either fizzled out in the playoffs or they just came up short. The closest they came to winning a Super Bowl just because of Brady was 2011 against the Giants when they got to the Super Bowl with like one of the worst defenses in the league and really only two weapons on offense. It was Brady, Wes Welker, and Rob Gronkowski were basically that entire team in 2011. And I'll give you Steven Gostkowski. Yeah, they had Aaron Hernandez back before he was, you know.
But the wideouts were not great beyond Welker, I remember. You're right about that.
Yeah, Hernandez was still in possession of firearms at the time. So, I mean, it is what it is. But it's like that's the closest they came to Brady carrying them all the way to the championship. And what happened? They got outplayed and outcoached for the entire game in that game against the Giants. And so it's just proof that you need more than just the elite quarterback. Tom Brady is the reason that they were in Super Bowl contention every single year. And the reason that they went to 9-1-6, he's the number one reason. That is true. But what's also true is that they never really won until they had more other elite talent around him, or talent at least that just rose up in the big moments like Danny Amendola did. And you need a complete balanced team to actually win the Super Bowl. That's just how it is. The last time they won, 2018, they won mainly because their defense allowed 3 points, but they also won because the special teams dominated field position. And then on offense, they made the big plays at the end of the game when they needed to in order to win. It was a team effort, mainly because of the defense, but they never won the Super Bowl without a complete team. That's just my point of it. And I think it's just unfair to say, oh, now that it was just because they had Brady the whole time, you know, because Bill desperately needs to find another good quarterback so we can sort of start to quiet down that whole narrative, because it's getting a little goofy. And I understand it because Brady's in the Super Bowl and the Patriots weren't good, and we don't really know what their plan is at quarterback right now. But it's getting a little silly. But Bill needs to get another quarterback, and he needs to prove that just give me a good quarterback and we'll be right back in this thing. That's what I really need to see from the Patriots side of things.
This is what happens when you have a 20-year debate in a world with no one has any patience whatsoever, and everyone remembers the last thing they saw. You get this. This is now it's over. It's all said and over. It's all done with now, because this is the last thing we saw, and this is 1 year. We don't have to wait any more than 1 year, but these are the results. So I want them to get a quarterback. It seems like there are more names out there by the day. It just seems like there's more names every day. The newest one now is Derek Carr. How would you feel about that?
I would like it. I would like him as a player. I just don't know that I would like it for what they might have to give up. Because just looking at what Stafford got, and I know that getting rid of Jared Goff's contract was a sort of a factor in that deal with the Rams and the Lions. So maybe if the Patriots aren't going to be getting out from under any contracts this offseason, so maybe they don't have to give up as much draft capital. I don't know, though. If they have to trade the 15th pick for Derek Carr, I wouldn't love that, but just
I wouldn't
as
do
a
that.
As a player, you said you would do that or what?
I wouldn't. No,
you wouldn't. Well, just as a player, I would like Derek Carr because he's been efficient the last few years. I don't know if you saw my article that I had a reaction to the rumor that Derek Carr might be on the trade block, and the guy for the Las Vegas Review Journal, his name escapes me right now. I apologize, but he mentioned the Patriots as a team that could be involved, and I think that's just speculation. I don't think he was actually reporting that. I think he's just looking at teams that need a quarterback because he mentioned Patriots, Colts, Washington football team. So it's like, yeah, they're going to be in on quarterbacks, and Bill knows Mike Mayock, and so they'll have a conversation. And I wouldn't love it for what they might have to give up for Carr, but I would like Carr because the last 3 years, there's been only 5 quarterbacks in the league that have started all 16 games the past 3 years. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers. I don't know if I'm going to get the whole list off the top of my head now, but it's good quarterback. Okay, I got it. Brady, Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Philip Rivers, and Derek Carr. Those are the only 5 guys to start every game, and I think games played is a very underrated stat, especially a quarterback.
You need
good
that.
To have a guy who's just, you know, out there every week.
Yes.
And on top of that, out of those 5, Derek Carr's had the highest completion percentage the last 3 years. And so I think there's something to be said for that efficiency. It would be nice to have a nice, efficient quarterback. I think a factor in that, though, is that he takes the safe play a little too much. He's a little bit of a check down Charlie. I don't know if you remember that Patriots-Raiders game this past season. Mm-hmm. But they were double-teaming the check down on a couple plays. They would double-team the running back in the flat because they know Derek Carr is just going to – he's going to give up on the play. They know he's not gonna take enough shots, and he's just gonna check down to the running back. So let's get all over this guy, and like, you know, maybe he'll just impulsively check down and throw a pick six. That was part of their plan. So it's like maybe they could coach that out of him. But after Cam Newton and after what we saw last year, I will take a guy who is gonna be competent, functional. He can physically throw the ball. He is a good passer. He's a good pocket passer. That's what he's proven to be, Derek Carr. And the problem, though, is that he still turns the ball over.
Mm.
He's had the most fumbles at quarterback in 2 of the last 3 years.
I don't want that.
Bill would not like that.
No.
It's no coincidence that his only winning season that year he almost won the MVP in 2016 was the year where he had his lowest interception rate. And he came through in the clutch. He had 7 game-winning drives that year. So it's like, I know it's in him. I know it's in him to protect the ball and come through and just execute in crunch time like that. I know he's capable of it. Can he do it every year? Can he do it every week? I don't know. But I would take Derek Carr as a short-term guy. I would definitely take him. I just don't.
Yeah, funny.
I just
funny
wouldn't love it
that.
If they had to give up the 15th pick or multiple firsts. Or anything. That's where it starts to get a little crazy.
Yeah, I was actually waiting for you to mention that from your story, that the 7 game winning drives last year, because that think of how many
it was his MVP year, not
yeah,
not his best season is when he did that.
Yeah, last but I go back to last year where the Patriots had multiple situations where they were in position for a game winning drive, and it just didn't come together for whatever reason.
Right, I think you could go back through those games; it would be like. You find 8 situations, they might have been like 1-7 in those situations. The Cam Newton.
Yeah, exactly.
So, situations.
And it's funny you bring up after what we saw last year, right? It does feel like last year was the bottoming out. I can't imagine they get somebody who gives them less in the passing game than Cam Newton gave them last year.
No, they're not going to get less.
That's not to rip on Newton. It's just, oh my God, they couldn't throw the ball. Jacoby Myers was their best passer. You know, the entire, like, honestly, Jesus, like he was really their was. Best. He was their best passing option.
That double pass was a dime.
It really was. And so I'm curious where they go with it. I wonder if, you know, I made a quick little post about this for the website as well with Ryan Fitzpatrick. Do they use that 15th pick on a quarterback and then sign a Fitzpatrick or somebody like him? And you have, okay, we have this guy, but we also have this as an option if we need it, because I don't feel like Fitzpatrick is horrible. I don't think he's great, but he can throw the ball. He can still sling it. It's just the turnovers as well. It feels like they're not going to get a perfect guy, no matter who they grab this offseason. So maybe it's about managing the risk and the financials of it while you develop a next guy. You know, like, because I do like the idea of Garoppolo. I think out of all the options right now, I don't love it, but I like it because he's familiar with the system. Belichick knows him, and he's pretty good when he's healthy. The problem is health. So it feels like no matter what they do, they're going to have some red flags here with whoever they get. But I like Carr. I think out of the options so far, I think he's near the top of my list, if not at the top of the list.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you're going to get someone with flaws. They're not going to get a perfect guy. But that is the thing with Carr. It's like I'd rather the issue be that he just needs to not fumble rather than he might not be able to play because he's made of balsa wood. You know, like that is the number one. I would like Jimmy G too because of all the other things you mentioned. But his availability has been below average since he's become like a full-time starter. So I don't feel great about that. If they could maybe push him to, you know, play through injuries more, I guess. I mean, I know he's had like a torn ACL, so there were times where he just couldn't play. But I don't know. Garoppolo is striking me as a guy that hasn't really pushed as far as he could as far as making sure he's out there every week. You know, because you take Jimmy Garoppolo at 80% over, you know, Brian Hoyer at 100%, I think. And so, yeah, if you're going to get a guy, I prefer the flaws to be that he just needs to cut back on the turnovers or something like that, rather than health, durability. Like, I totally agree with that. So,
yeah,
they're not going to get anyone perfect, which I agree with. If they do go the Fitzpatrick route, I really hope they draft a quarterback in the first round. Because, you know, you get – if it's Fitzpatrick and Stidham, not ideal. Jeff Howell, The Athletic, did a column recently. I don't know if this was all Jeff's research. I don't know. It feels like it was like The Athletic research team did stuff. But I don't want to take away from Jeff because he wrote the column. I'm giving him credit for it. And the stats, he basically concluded that the Patriots need to draft anyone. But if they want to draft a franchise quarterback, it has to be in the top 12, 13 and after. Statistically, the odds, I guess, take a nosedive as far as your chances of getting a franchise quarterback. And it sort of runs counter to what I've been saying, where it's like you don't need to trade up to number two and take Mitchell Trubisky because you're desperate and we have to take a quarterback. And I don't want them to look at it and say, well, you know, there's better players on the board, but we need a quarterback, so let's take the best quarterback available. And then they reach for a guy who's no good. Like, no, just take the best player available in the first round. It doesn't have to be the quarterback, so to speak. But if they're going to take a quarterback, they might have to move up, which is a little concerning. And it's especially concerning that if they have to trade for Derek Carr and they're going to give up all this draft capital, well, are you robbing Peter to pay Paul at that point? Because they have other things besides quarterback they need to figure out. You know, they could use all the draft picks they can get, high draft picks especially. So I don't see them trading like a bunch of high picks to get a quarterback. So I think honestly the most realistic scenario is the one you're laying out, where they sign a cheap veteran like Fitzpatrick and then they draft a quarterback. Maybe they move up a few spots to 10th or whatever, because just to leapfrog a team or two to get their guy. And maybe they want someone like Zach Wilson or Trey Lance, you know, one of these top quarterbacks that everyone's talking about. And so I just don't trade up and take the guy unless you truly believe in him and he's going to be the next guy. Don't tell me that Bill's one of these GMs that's going to look at it and say, well, you know, we're desperate for another quarterback, so let's just, no matter what, let's just take the best quarterback available. I hope that's not their approach.
Yeah, I mean, they just need something. Like, I hate to oversimplify it, but to your point, it's they just need something, right? And what we're talking about here, weighing drafting a rookie versus, you know, signing a guy, you know, you kind of touched on it, and I agree that it's easier to say to a player, be smarter than, hey, tell your bones not to break. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, like, that's kind of like, I think that's where they need to
have
prioritize.
Have you told your ACL he's an asshole?
Yeah, can you maybe drink some milk every now and then?
Jimmy, your AC joint's being a dick.
Yeah, if they can, like, that's like, so that's where I just get me somebody who I'm not going to have to worry about dropping back on every play, because I even felt that way with Cam, right? Like, when Cam would drop back or take a hit, you know, just given his injury situation with the foot, with the shoulder, with everything, you're like, ugh, all right, well, he's a snap away from bringing Jared Stidham, which turned out to be almost as bad, honestly, as watching Cam.
No, I was more worried of when he dropped back that he was just going to throw it into triple coverage, and
which he did,
picked off,
or throw it at someone's feet, just whipping it at someone's feet.
It's like, oh, Cam, it's not soccer, Cam. Okay,
yeah. So the only thing I wonder is, can they get a quality, you know, referencing the Howe article, can they get a quality quarterback at 15, right? And if not, what's the price to move up 5 picks? Like, if it's because that's a great point by you, that they have to continue to replenish the, you know, the system, so to speak, with more capable bodies, with these high end picks. They got to hit on some, and it seems like there are positions here where they can hit on some. So I'd like to see them do that. I mean, I want to see that new wideout or that new tight end to really give this offense a new complexion. I'd love to see, you know, that new defensive star, whoever that may be. I don't know the draft like Alex Barth does, you know. I want one of those guys here that we can say, okay, this is the building block of the future. Kind of like what McCourty was when they picked him, you know, years ago. And same thing with Hightower, Jamie Collins, all these guys that they had in the past where you went, okay, this is the building block. This is the guy we can build around. You know, I don't know if I necessarily have that on offense with any of their picks, you know, with any of the recent picks. And on the defensive side of the ball, we've liked what we've seen from certain guys, but I would love to continue to add to that, because I think, especially in the secondary, Kyle Duggar, I thought, showed you a lot. Okay, let's see if we can get him somebody else now as well.
Yeah, I mean, I like the picks they made. I think Duggar and Josh Uche are going to be good players. I think the concern might be that, like, they might need Josh Uche to become like the next franchise linebacker, because they don't really have that in the system right now. And they might – I honestly don't – I haven't done a deep dive into, like, all the top prospects yet, because I'm not a big draft guy. Alex Barth is our big draft guy. But I mean, I don't know. Maybe there is a Roquan Smith, Devin White type of linebacker that they could, if they had to move up into a few spots into the top 10, and they take him. I'd love that kind of pick. And I think it was Mike Reese who this past Sunday or last Sunday wrote that he's leaning against the Patriots taking a quarterback in the first round because this is the philosophy that I want them to have. It is their philosophy. They just want good players. They're not gonna draft based on what they need, and I know that they need the quarterback more than anything else, but they're not gonna bypass all these other players that they think are better to get a quarterback just because they need a quarterback. And we don't know, he might suck, but hey, we need a quarterback, so let's pass on, you know, the next Ray Lewis, because just we need a guy who throws footballs well. And so they're not going to do that, and so I think Patriots fans should brace for them taking like a defensive tackle, or even somewhere that seems like a position of strength, like offensive line, cornerback. Like they might make a move like that. They're going to take who they think is the best player available. That's what I think they're going to do. And so that's not necessarily going to be a quarterback. I think people need to be mentally prepared for this. And that's the thing with a guy like Carr, or what Stafford would have been, or Jimmy G, is that it might buy them a year. They might not. If they have a guy like that, maybe they don't have to draft a quarterback this year. Maybe Bill is looking at the 2022 drafts and saying, like, oh, there's a couple guys in there that I would want in that spot. And I mean, I know that it might be harder because you might be looking at a team that they get a little better, and now all of a sudden they're drafting in the 20s. And so now it's even harder to get up into that top 12. That's another consideration, I suppose. You know, like maybe you should move up and take a quarterback while you're in this spot. Because I think the fact that Belichick got to 7-9 with that roster was something. Guy throwing footballs into the dirt and under the ground, never to be seen again, and throwing into triple coverage. The way the quarterbacks played and the lack of depth on the roster, it's like, I don't know how they even won 7 games. So you give them a competent quarterback, and I think they're going to be right back in AFC East contention, playoff contention. So I guess it is sort of an interesting, a tough spot to be in, where it's like, you know, to take the QB now or to not, you know, because like the idea is it's sort of like the idea with the Rams. It's like, well, I know we traded a couple first for Stafford, but the idea is that we're trading the 32nd pick for the next couple of years because we're trying to win Super Bowls here, you know? So I don't know if Bill looks at it as like, well, we're going to get a lot better with this quarterback, so maybe we should take another quarterback now in the event that we're not, we're drafted low again. So But I don't know. That's true. A long way of saying I still think they should just take the best player. Take a sure thing, regardless of position. Don't gamble on a quarterback that you don't know what he's going to be. With that, well,
it also goes back to last year, right? Where last year, their first round pick, we all talked about, oh, there's Patrick Queen, there's all these wideouts, there's this, there's that, and then they go with a safety, you know, and everyone's like,
they
wait a minute, what?
Down. No, they trade, yeah, they trade down to get a safety.
Yeah. And so anytime we think that we have them, oh, this is what they're going to take, they need to take this, it seems like that doesn't end up being the case. So
yeah.
I said it last offseason when Brady left, and I'm saying it again. I'm excited to see what happens here because it just feels like there are limitless options for them. The direction where they go, I hope my excitement leads to something better than 7-9. But I think we're going to have an actual offseason here. I think we have to, just based on what we saw last year, based on the holes. You're going to see some moves here, and I'm encouraged by some of the names I've heard, not all, but some of them, and guys we've talked about and what they could do to this team. Because again, like you said, 7-9 last year with that play at the most important position in sports, it tells you that this is still a team that can make some noise if the proper adjustments and the proper guys are brought in here, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think people are getting way ahead of themselves. We're like, Belichick screwed. And like, obviously he botched the transition. He didn't have his Steve Young to follow his Joe Montana, which I mean, he might've had it if he just went with Garoppolo a few years ago. Then again, they might not have won another Super Bowl. So it's
always take the Super Bowl.
Tom Brady made it hard. He made it hard on Bill. And he couldn't come up with the plan B. If his plan B was what they just did, it was a bad plan B. So, but you know, a good quarterback can turn a team around in a hurry. Teams can get good in a hurry in this league. Teams get good overnight. You know, the Bucks got a quarterback and they got good overnight. It happens all the time. You know, and teams could go from good to sucking. It's like this is what life is like for every other team. And like the Patriots are basically every other team. Now, we were in a fantasy land for 20 years with Brady and Belichick together at a high level. It's like, this is what it's like for every other team. Now you just got to hope you find a quarterback and you hope you build enough of a good roster on him and you just hope to get into the tournament and then we see what happens. That's what it's been for the last two decades for pretty much everyone else. So, I mean, that's the part that I'm, I don't know if excited is the right word, but it's compelling to me. It's intriguing. You know, it's not so boring. It's like, well, we don't even have to pay attention for 4 months. Just wake me up when it's the end of January and it's the Final Four. Now, like, you know, the uncertainty makes it a little exciting, but it just got worse as that season went along. Because once we realized they sucked and they weren't going to make the playoffs, and it's like, all right, well, now it's not interesting. Like, it's interesting when you're actually in the mix. And I think all they need is the quarterback. Quarterback makes that much of a difference on every team. Bill gets a good quarterback in here and he stays healthy. Protects the ball, manages the offense, and then maybe occasionally makes a big play at the end of a game, helps you win a few games that way. They're right back in it. I think it does need to happen in a hurry because, you know, if you suck again, like what then what are we going to say? Imagine they get worse next year. They win fewer games. I don't know how the quarterbacking could be worse, like you said.
But I was going to say, I think it's possible. I really do. I don't know, though. I mean, yeah, that's – I don't want to talk about that because that's a terrifying thought to me.
Had like three touchdown passes. It's like it can't possibly be worse.
No, it really can't. But everything you're saying is right, honestly. Everything about it is right. It's just I'm of the belief that given the grave dancing we've seen and heard this year from media to former players even, it seems
Yeah, it's like, be careful what you're saying. Be careful what you wish for here.
Exactly.
Well, Belichick being done, and it was all about Brady. You know, what's going to happen if Bruce Arians screws up his timeouts and it ends up being Mahomes who gets the ball at the end with a chance to win, and they win, and like you start to look at – you come out of that game saying, well, where was the play calling? Where was the game management? Where was the clock management? Like, people are going to say, oh, well, what's Brady in the Super Bowl without Belichick, huh? You know, I mean, it's not totally fair because he made it all the way to the Super Bowl and the Patriots didn't even make the playoffs. And so, like, but still, like, you wonder what Brady's going to be. Like, do people really think that Brady would have gone to 10 Super Bowls and won 6 Super Bowls with Bruce Arians the whole time? If Brady were in Tampa Bay this whole time, would he have won 6 Super Bowls and played in the Super Bowl half his career? Of course he wouldn't have. It's because they had a program in place in addition to the franchise quarterback.
Well, he was that's the program, they had right?
Success. I'm so sick of this Brady versus Belichick shit. I'm sick of it.
Yeah, it's annoying because
again, I'm rooting for Brady. I want him to win. I love Brady. I'm always going to love Tom Brady. I want him to win. But why does that mean I have to root against Bill Belichick? That's where I feel like it's getting too far. Like, why can't you root for both of them? I get it. Oh, it's not fun. It's not fun for your hot takes or whatever. But like, just because I'm rooting for Brady doesn't mean I'm not also rooting for Bill to get back in this thing. I don't get why people root against the Patriots. Like, they want the Patriots to fail and they want to spite them. They want Brady to be able to spite them. It's like, yeah, I'm happy for Brady to prove that he's able to win without Belichick if they win. But like, are you a Patriots fan or not? Do you want the Patriots to get good again? Or are you just gonna be a Bucs fan?
Listen, they are a fan of the Patriots. Second, they are a fan of their takes. Number one, that's the world we live in now. You root for your take above all else. Who cares about the team you grew up watching or the jersey you're wearing? It's all about your take, baby. That's all it is. It's why it's hell. It's why this industry is stupid.
I know.
Sorry, don't care. Industry's stupid. Hate it.
Do you think it's a cop-out when people say, like, well, you know, I hope I'm wrong, but here's my hot take? Because I tend to do that. This goes back to when I was 10 years old, and the Patriots were in the Super Bowl against the Packers. And I went around telling all my friends, guys, I don't like the Patriots' chances. I think this is Brett Favre's year. The Packers are clearly the better team. This time, 10 years old. And I'm already coming up with hot takes, but, you know, listening to our competitor back when they were the only sports station. It's like, well, I guess, isn't this how you talk about sports? It's like, guys, I don't think I want the Patriots to win. I hope I'm wrong, but I think the Packers are better, and I'm picking the Packers. And everyone thought I was an a-hole for that. You know, is there a happy medium to be had where, like, you can say what you honestly believe and just hope that your take is wrong? You know, root for the team. Root against your take, I guess, is what I'm saying. Isn't that okay?
To root against your take? I do it all the time.
Yeah.
I do it. I love to be wrong. Big fan of being wrong. No, but I don't know. I just think that's the way that everything is now. Our discussion points are also poisoned because people, they just desperately want their opinion to be right. And even if it's proven wrong, they'll just find a way to move the goalpost and say, no, actually, I was right when I said it. And it's just like, right. Okay, well, then
you can't be afraid to be wrong in this business. You got to just say what you believe. You can't be afraid to have it turn back around on you. But why do people take it to the next level of, like, I'm rooting to not be wrong?
That beats me, man. It's just
You said, move the goalpost if you end up being wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I can bring data and evidence and undeniable facts to the argument, but your feelings will always, you know, if I say no, your feelings are incorrect. All of a sudden I'm invalidating you as a person. So it's like, you know, when you frame the discussion so you never lose, it's really easy to argue sports. Me, I just gotta be honest. 2021, I don't give a shit. You can yell all you want. Yeah. I do not care. Not appealing to me.
That sort of does go back to Facebook and Twitter just ruining the discourse, ruining our culture, ruining our brains, ruining our minds, ruining everybody, ruining everything, ruining the world, really. And that's why I'm out of there. I am out.
Yeah, I'm not quite to your level yet, but I've been saying this in real life to people I know and to friends, and I'm trying to follow through with it. No more arguing on the Bird app for free. If you want to argue with me, you got to pay me. That's how this goes now.
I might literally tweet something like that after this podcast is done. Guys, I ain't talking on the Bird app anymore.
Yeah.
If you want to talk to me, come on to Instagram and shoot me a DM. That's where I'm posting my best shit.
Yeah, yeah. No, I just – no more arguing on the Bird app for free. You got to pay me. You want to yell at me? You got to pay me. That's how it is now. Venmo, PayPal, whatever it is you want, you got to pay me if you want to argue with me. I am not giving you my energy for free. It's way too important to my well-being.
Who do you think you are? Do you get paid to have opinions? Well, I guess, sort of.
I'm a person who just wants to exist without some rando I've never known telling me I'm an asshole because I don't think Tuukka Rask is a member of ISIS.
Yeah,
that's what I want.
That's usually my frustration. It's like these people come out of nowhere with their pooping on everything when you're just saying something positive or something neutral. Like, it's like, I get it if I say something angry or negative. I'm not going to, like, I'll get negative reactions to something I said that was angry or negative or controversial, and then be like, oh, my God, why are they reacting? It's always when it's like Tuukka Rask made a good save there. Oh, what are you saying? They're going to win the cup? They're not going to win the cup. Guy sucks.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, right. the reworking of what you say is, like, incredible now. It used to be, you know, like, they lost last weekend, and I said, they fought back from down three, and they got a point, so you take it. Someone's like, oh, are we playing for participation trophies now? I'm like, nope, not saying that. Just saying they were lucky to get a point tonight. I don't know why you're reframing this argument into something I'm not saying. Are you really that dumb that you can't just, like, say, oh, yeah, that was good? Like,
They are that dumb. It's just unavoidable. So it's like, I'm dumb. I can't do it anymore.
No. And that's the point I'm at. Like, if you want to root for your take and not talk logically because your take is just so valuable to you and it's your precious, you can't let it go. Like, whatever. I don't want to talk with you because you're exhausting. If you can never change your opinion when you have more data, more information, you see something with your own eyes, then there's no point in ever communicating with you because you're going to be stuck in your ways. And it's pointless for me to waste my time and energy trying to change your mind when you have no interest in changing your mind. Guess what? Some things suck in the beginning and they turn out okay, right? Like, look at Dustin Pedroia. He began his career terrible. He was hitting like 100, you know, back in his rookie season. Turns out to be a pretty damn good player.
And then what happened? A laser show, as he so famously said.
Exactly.
And he was actually talking about David Ortiz back when they asked, when he was talking about that.
That's right. Yeah.
That was back when we thought Ortiz was done. Imagine Twitter was as big as it is now back in 2009 when David Ortiz was batting 220 with like 10 home runs. And we're like, oh, God, he's done.
Yeah.
Then got on the right program and, you know, he had another decade of success.
I love it. I loved it. And yeah, so I don't know, whatever. That's my social media rant for the day. I just, if you're never going to change opinions, don't talk to me. I don't care.
It's a good place to leave it. I think we've had some good old fashioned sports talk in the middle of this.
I like it.
We covered the blizzard. We covered your apartment being weird. Let's see. Okay. Let me see. I added my notes. Social media sucking. Okay. We got that covered. So, yeah, I think that was a good episode, right?
Yeah, I like it.
I think people will be mildly entertained.
Honestly, that's all I ask for is that I mildly entertain you. That's all.
Are you not entertained? Sorry.
No, that's all. The only thing I will say is if you are still listening and you have the time, please go on Twitter and find there's a GM or GM candidate. Mike, I might be saying this wrong. It's either I think Mike Fuda is how you say it. Anyways, he was the LA Kings director of scouting. He was their assistant GM, all that. He is campaigning basically to get the Penguins job. And his segment he did during intermission last night is so funny because he talks about all the players that he helped discover during his time with the LA Kings, but works it into a way that he's talking about the game that he's covering. And it's so good because he's just making all references to guys that he helped discover and sign and draft for the LA Kings. And then he just grabs a Penguin and puts it on the desk and is like, I would never openly campaign for a job. It's beautiful. I wish every media person did this who wants a job in the front office. Please make time to find this. It's so good.
Seems entirely too wholesome for something that the internet would actually enjoy.
That's a good point.
Twitter has already ruined this man's career. I think that's what Ty is saying. All right. I'm going to check that out because that does sound like something that would give me a chuckle, put a smile on my face, all that stuff. Anyway, thanks for listening. If you made it this far, thanks. I love you. Thanks to our listeners across the United States, Canada, Finland, Australia, Czech Republic, Germany, Ireland, Italy, Netherlands, Slovakia, Tyler Lee Anderson. We have a listener in Slovakia on last week's episode and a listener in Spain. Isn't that crazy? We have listeners all over the world now.
I like it. I'll take it.
Hockey fans all over the world. I love it. All right. This is Sidelines at 985thesportshub.com. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.